Dracula, the most iconic horror character in the horror genre today, made famous by Bram Stoker, released in 1897, brought forth a new character, a new villain that has endured to this very day, over 100 years plus. He's been known as the King of the Vampires, a Transylvania nobleman who practiced the dark arts and necromancy and became an undead vampire that seeks the blood of the living, with the ability to control nature, shapeshift, hypnotize people, and with incredible strength of 100 men, only to be undone by the great Van Helsing. But who is Dracula? Surprisingly enough, he is semi-based on a true character, and quite possibly his villainy is based off of lies and propaganda of Vlad III Dracula, Prince of Wallachia. So come with me as we take a brief look at the true Dracula in comparison to the Dracula that we know today. I'm the Paranormal Pilgrim, your host, and this is the Land of the Shadow People. Welcome back, everybody. I'm glad you were able to join me today. In fact, actually, today is National Podcasting Day as of September 30th. And I'm glad you're able to join me today as we talk about one of the most iconic characters that there is. But before we get going, as usual, please hit the like button or spook it if you like. Subscribe and share this podcast because you guys, as I always say, are my media outreach. And I enjoy doing this, and I hope to bring more and more listeners in as we continue to improve on this paranormal phenomenon. And also, I am trying to raise more listeners on BitChute and Rumble to spread the free speech multi-platform. So if you're listening on any of those, go ahead and subscribe and help grow the paranormal community in a highly political area to give a little break to the insanity of the world around us. Enough of that. Let us go into our subject today. So when we think of Dracula, as I said earlier, most of us think of the iconic character Bela Lugosi. A slick, debonair-looking man in a tuxedo with a cape and big medallion in the front. A man that portrays confidence, nobility, sexual prowess. In fact, that's kind of what Bram Stoker was trying to do when he first published this book. But more than that, he was trying to portray, in a lot of sense, not necessarily a conflict between that which is good and evil, or about, as lots of historians and scholars try to say today, that it was about sexuality, which is really not. If you read the book, read it a couple times. Sometimes it can be a hard read. But you would find that it is actually really a conflict between the sacred or the holy and the defiled and unclean more than it is good and evil. In fact, Dracula represents everything that is unholy. He's undead, he's not living, he's not quite alive, feeding on blood, which is commonly sourced as where life flows in the human body. He is a mockery to Christianity, in the sense he's a mockery to the resurrection, instead of, in Christian theology, the body being returned whole and complete. He is corrupt and evil and defiled. He uses the ability of the dark arts to transform themselves in himself into wolves or bats, mist, the ability to seduce his prey to doing what he wants to do, to hypnotize them, to mind control them. You know, everything that is an antithesis of what we would like to be as a human being, with free will and the ability to choose and to keep ourselves, as they would say, in the image of God. And Dracula represents the opposite of that. And as we look through or read through the story of Dracula, you will find that a group of men and one woman battle against this dark and unclean force through friendship, through love, and through their faith. It is quite blatant and quite obvious when you read through the book, in my personal opinion. It's not so much about sexuality as many modern people like to try to say today. It is much deeper than that. It's a much, much deeper story. But with that, when Bram Stoker was researching this character that he wanted to do, he came across, at the time, a less well-known prince named Vlad III Dracula. He was a Wallachian prince born in 1431, which is now in Transylvania, in modern-day Romania, and would later die in 1476. He was known to use cruel methods on his enemies. In fact, one of the most famous things he liked to do was impalement. In fact, it earned him the name Vlad Tepes, or Vlad the Impaler. But if you look into the life of Dracula, you may find that it is quite intriguing. Where Wallachia was, it sat between the Ottoman Empire and Christian Europe. In fact, his father had earned the name Dracul from the Holy Roman Emperor Sigmund in his defense of Christian Europe, which created a new order, the Order of the Dragon. And thus, Dracula, meaning the son of the dragon, not in the sense of evil, but in the sense of this holy order. When his father claimed the throne to Wallachia, he had sent his two younger sons to the Ottoman Empire and to the Sultan as collateral for their father's position to hold within his throne, within his kingdom, in order to protect his assets. Now, it wasn't that they were sent in a prison in a dungeon. In fact, Vlad and his brother learned quite a bit as a hostage, so to speak, within the Ottoman Empire. He learned the language, he learned the culture. In fact, he learned military strategies and whatnot, which would later to come back and bite the Ottomans and the biscuits, if you know what I mean. Vlad had returned in 1448, being informed of the assassination of his father and his elder brother to the hand of Wallachian boyards. Boyards being noblemen in the year before. This would provoke Vlad to seek a lifetime of revenge from that time forth. In fact, most of his campaigns were against those who had assassinated his brother and his father. In fact, Vlad was briefly victorious in 1448, only to be disposed of a couple months later. And then that would start an 8-year struggle where Vlad would come and claim the throne, or the Voladate. And I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, and I apologize. You know, it was during this time where Vlad had earned his reputation for atrocities such as the impalement. Now, much of this came from propaganda from his enemies, from Wallachian boyards, from German noblemen, from the Ottomans in some cases, in order to, I guess, ruin his reputation so that he would not gain allies, that he would lose face in front of the people. But in fact, Vlad was actually quite good to his people. He did take care of the poor, and he looked after his people, and he gave money and built monasteries. He was a Eastern Orthodox. Now, if you were a Catholic in Wallachia, then no, it wasn't necessarily good for you because of the tension and the strife between Catholics and Eastern Orthodox at this time, which unfortunately still goes on today. But some of his methods were impalement, and it was through this that the propagandas started to spread that he would like to impale his enemies and dying in the midst of the bodies as they slowly died and slid down the poles. And there was no evidence this ever happened. In fact, there was another rumor that was spread that Dracula had invited the poor and the destitute and the cripple to a giant feast. And according to legend, it said that he had made a promise that he could take away their pains, that they'd never be poor and whatnot. And when they all agreed, as the story goes, that he boarded up the building and set the building on fire and killed everybody inside. There was never any evidence of this. And like I said, he was well known among the people. In fact, when the Ottomans invaded, the people rallied around him. One thing he was famous for that echoes through this day was in 1462 during a battle with the Ottomans. And this is where Vlad's time of internment within the Ottoman Empire come to fight back against the Ottomans, is knowing the tactics and the language. One of the things Vlad was very famous for was disguising himself as Ottoman soldiers, speaking the language. A lot of times he would sneak into their camps, give out false orders, cause a lot of chaos, and at one time was almost successful at killing the Sultan Memnon II. Unfortunately, it did not go as well, but during his retreat in 1462, he was able to escape, but along the way he impaled, according to estimates, over 20,000 Ottoman soldiers. And when the Sultan came to pursue him, burning and razing everything to the ground in Wallachia, he came across this forest of his dead soldiers impaled. The scene so horrific and so horrifying that the soldiers refused to move on. The Sultan was disgusted and they themselves retreated. Eventually, Dracula had one final battle with the Sultan. On this one, he had lost, and they had decapitated him, and impaled his head outside a city wall. According to the stories, some monks from a nearby monastery came by, retrieved the head, and secretly buried Dracula's body. And so it's through this, in my personal belief, that this is where Bram Stoker kind of got a lot of his thoughts about how evil Vlad the Third Dracula was through this propaganda, because this propaganda has survived throughout years. There are still people today who really believe that Dracula was this horrifying creature of a man, this monster. And albeit impaling people is not great, but he was a man of his time. And that's sometimes how we have to look at history. You have to look at the people at their times. Otherwise, what is the point? One day we will too will be judged with those eyes. But he did what he could for his people. He stood against the Ottoman Empire in protection of the Ottoman invasion into Christian Europe, which a few years later was stopped after the Siege of Vienna, when the Polish Tsar came down and wiped out the Ottoman Empire once and for all, never to invade Europe again. Had Dracula had a large army, who knows? Maybe history would have wrote things a little bit differently for him. He was a brilliant tactician. He knew how to fight the Ottomans well. Unfortunately, he had enemies on all sides. And the rest was lost in history, other than the propaganda and the lies that were spread about Vlad Dracula. And through here, Bram Stoker was able to create his version of Dracula that we know today. A monster and a villain of the worst kind. In fact, they say that Castle Dracula is haunted today. And it may be possible. He impaled many of his enemies outside his own city walls with such tragic deaths. Whether you believed he was right or whether he was wrong, doesn't really matter. In many cases, they say places of intense tragedy, and war is intense tragedy. Is a breeding ground for the paranormal. But I would encourage you to look a little bit deeper. You might find the character of Vlad Dracula to be much more fascinating than the fictional character. But if not, either way, this is a great story that Bram Stoker produced. In fact, it's one of my favorite stories. It's one of my traditions to actually listen to an audiobook of Dracula through the Halloween season. But with that, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me and to contribute to this podcast by sharing. And until next time, when we speak about the voodoo priestess Marie Laveau, on the side of the veil of the next, I bid you farewell.